Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard, I'm going to record this in two parts because we got to hustle a little bit. Game time has been moved up to 3 p.m. Central, as there's expected to be some rain, perhaps some hail, and certainly a lot of wind in the evening and night hours on Friday. So game one between the Bulldogs and LSU will take place at 3 o'clock. I apologize for those of you that couldn't make it. We got to get the game in, okay? And it looks like some people have already adjusted their schedule because traffic in town this evening was already a little thick, right? But yeah, we're going to spend our first segment talking a little bit about the LSU Tigers. If you are a JeansPage.com subscriber, and you certainly should be, on Thursday, you got to read an exclusive interview with LSU coach Jay Johnson and an exclusive interview with SEC legend Ben McDonald, probably our favorite LSU Tiger, right? And arguably the best college baseball color guy in the game. Proud to call Ben McDonald a friend and so appreciative of the time that he spends with me from time to time. Providing some context. And so that's the benefit of being in this game as long as I have. You make some good relationships and they pay off. So if you're not a JeansPage subscriber, you can be today and get 50% off the annual subscription price. That'll take you all the way through spring of next year. So come check it out. You'll be glad you did. I told you guys on the Wednesday show that we were sitting on some football news. That news now out of the bags. We're proud to have broken that story. Mason Miller is back in Stark Vegas, back in Maroon and White. Going to be working as an offensive line consultant along with Phil Lotholt and his group. And it's a wonderful thing because you're going to have somebody in the building that knows the system, that knows Mississippi State, that knows what Jeff Lebby expects. While the rest of the coaches are out recruiting and things like that, Mason Miller can kind of conduct some meetings, things like that. And so that's an important addition, I think. Number one, I'm a Mason Miller fan. And I think that had we kept him on in 2023, things may look a little different today in the building. You know, again, Zach Arnett will readily admit that he made a mistake. You know, changing the offense. And I think it says a lot about Jeff Lebby to bring Zach Arnett back. And I think it means a lot that Jeff Lebby would bring Mason Miller in and Zach Arnett be okay with it. And that's what I've been told, is that everybody is happy and just wants to win. And now here we go. And Miller and Arnett were really tight, which kind of made the news surprising, you know, when he decided to, you know, change the offense up. And then, of course, you know, they bring in Schmidt, of course, who was one of Arnett's best friends, and they brought in one of Brad Peterson's best friends. And, you know, it just, it didn't work out. And had we kept Mason Miller, who knows how it works out. It still may not have worked with Barbe's offense. But no matter how we slice it, Mason Miller is back. He is thrilled to be back. He tells me he can't wait to wear the interlocking MSU logo. He agrees with me and most of you that it is our best logo. It is our football identity. But he loves Starkville. He's got a lot of great friends in town. He's got some guys that some of our donors that had become like personal friends, and they would go fishing and hunting together and things of that nature. And so, you know, Mason Miller, in many respects, was kind of born to be here. You know, he's made a lot of stops during his career, but will tell you how much he loves it here. So we're happy to have him back. And again, you can read all about that for free over at JeansPage.com. But again, you know, we try to do our best to be newsbreakers. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But this is a story that we were kind of well ahead of the game on. And very happy to share that good news with you. And I tell you, reading the comments on the message boards and on Twitter and Facebook, this has been one of the moves that Jeff Lebby has made that has probably been the most well received. And you don't do things, you know, just for the sake of public sentiment. But when you can bring a guy back that loved being here and did a good job while he was here, that's a smart play. So kudos to Jeff Lebby for bringing Mason Miller back. We look forward to having him back in our building. And he's already in Starkville, just so you guys know. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. Man, we love Bulldog Burger Company. We love it. We have since they opened. You know, I don't just eat for nourishment. I eat for enjoyment too, right? It's like you have to eat to sustain life, but you also eat to enjoy life, right? That's one of the better parts of living is having a high quality meal. Well, you can always get one at Bulldog Burger Company. Let me give you the recipe. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. Okay, start there. Okay, well, you're going to order your beverage, no matter what that is. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. Before the entree is served, you'll already begin to feel better looking. By the time you get home, you will be better looking. The world around you will be better looking. You pick up that entree. Maybe it's a burger. Maybe it's a salad. Find your own favorites. A lot of newbies up there. And I wanted to get some Bulldog Burger Company today, but it just didn't work out. You know, the schedule itself didn't work out. So we'll try to grab some this weekend so we can try that new Smash Burger. We have tried the Black Label Smash. And as a fan of Zakk Wylde and Ozzy Osbourne, it reminds me of Black Label Society. That may be my burger of choice moving forward. I've got a Zakk Wylde guitar tattooed on my forearm. And so, big fan. And maybe that's the way to go. Maybe that burger chose me instead of me choosing that burger. But find your favorites and try those new menu items. You'll be glad you did. And then, right as it's about time to ask for the check, go ahead and order that chocolate shake or that Nutella shake or whatever the shake of the week is to go. And you can ride that ride home with a smile. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. I've given you the keys to the kingdom. Now go unlock it and enjoy life and enjoy it more abundantly. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. Let's spend a little time talking about OSU. Now, here's the thing that I will tell you. Many of you young bucks maybe don't appreciate this because you didn't grow up in it like I did, right? And many of our compatriots, right? So, obviously, in the 80s, Mississippi State pretty much dominated the SEC. We didn't win an AFL championship. We went to Omaha a few times. But we didn't win the national championship. And in many respects, people considered Mississippi State the class of the Southeastern Conference. That was a fair assessment. Ron Polk, Skip Bertman, great friends all the way back to their time in Miami. We're also very friendly rivals. They wanted to beat each other. And then Skip Bertman kind of built upon what we did and took it to another level. Won four NAFL championships in the 90s. And it made us very envious. It did. And we've kind of held our own against LSU, but the Paul Maneri years were tough. They were. He understood the rivalry, too. That's a guy that, you know, was a coach at Notre Dame when they came in here and lost a regional to us. And he wanted the job, didn't get the job. And so there may have been a little personal angst involved in all that, too. Chris Simonis had a pretty good job against LSU. You remember in 2022, their first national championship under Jay Johnson, the Bulldogs went down to Baton Rouge and won in Baton Rouge, took series. We didn't even make Hoover that year. We beat OSU, and it meant a lot. It did. And so, you know, we've had some success. We've won, I guess, with three of the last five series. The last year, they got us, right? And we blew some leads down there. Remember how crazy that weather was? I think one night I got done in the press box, 2 a.m. But it's what we do, right? And I remember Chris Simonis says, "Steve, I give it to you. You're a diehard." I said, "Coach, I'm a professional. There's a difference. There's a difference. I got a job to do. You guys wanted to hear from your coach. You wanted to hear from your players. We made it happen. That's the gig." We couldn't just say, "Well, it's already past my bedtime. I'm going to go to bed." You know, no. Not doing it. So let's take a quick look at kind of what LSU has done this year. As you guys know, we take some glee with them losing, right? We do. But it comes from a place of jealousy, right? I mean, let's just kind of be honest about it. Tigers are 24-18 overall and 6-12 in the Southeastern Conference. They are 3-7 in true road games. They haven't played a lot of road games outside of SEC play. But it all started with a three-game sweep of Milwaukee. Two of those three games ended in a mercy rule game. They scored a ton of runs that weekend, 31 runs. but they gave up 15. And you say, well, you know, Steve, it was a lopsided series. But I think because of the fact that you look back now in hindsight, and maybe there were some problems. Kent State, the Golden Flashes, fresh after beating Tennessee, you know, they make a move to Baton Rouge and make a game of it, but ultimately the Tigers win 10-7. LSU, that knocks off Nicholls in another mercy rule game, 12-1 in 8 innings. And then Indiana, a team that's really struggling this year. A lot of people up there in Indiana want Chris Simonis back as their head coach. Yeah, maybe it works out. But the Tigers win 14-7. They were ranked number 2 in the country at that point. And then they get together on it's weird that Jacksonville Baseball Classic. They play Indiana, then they beat Notre Dame 9-4, and then they beat Central Florida 11-0. And you know, none of those teams you look at and say, hey, it's a great team. Then the first maybe chink in the armor. They lose at home to McNeese State 7-6. And that's when you really begin to wonder a little bit about pitching depth. And we go back and we talk about that first weekend in Milwaukee, right? They're not a great team, but they did score some runs. They gave up a lot, but they did score some. And so midweek pitching fails them as McNeese wins 7-6. The next weekend, LSU plays a 4-game set against two teams. They play Dartmouth, Northeastern, and so LSU wins the first three. They take both from Dartmouth and Northeastern. Of course, we played them last year down in Tallahassee in a regional. They win the first game 3-1, and then LSU loses the Monday game 13-10. And again, it says a little bit about pitching depth. And if you needed to underscore that even further, after playing 4 games on the weekend, which is always a dicey proposition, they lost at Louisiana Lafayette on Wednesday, 7-2. Then they get Sacramento State, and this is when everybody in Baton Rouge began to kind of lose their religion. They beat Sac State 15-4 in game 1, and then in game 2, Sac State with the 5-4 upset, and you thought, oh, it's hilarious, right? Well, it got even funnier. If you're an LSU hater, I respect LSU, but man, I do enjoy it when they lose. Sacramento State takes the series in Alex Box with a 6-1 win on Sunday. We never expected that. We thought Sacramento State was an online school up until a couple years ago. In Tuesday's game, they beat Creighton 8-4, and then they get into SEC play. They go to Nashville, and I thought LSU would win this series. They don't. Vanderbilt walks it off on Friday, 13-12. And then Vanderbilt gets them 11-3. And then in game 3, LSU gets Vandy 16-9. So that they steal one. Grambling State rolls in. No real trouble. LSU wins at 7-1. Then Oklahoma. Oklahoma rolls into the box. I would assume that's the first time as an SEC opponent, because I don't think they went last. They wouldn't have gone there 2 years in a row. LSU wins game 1-7-1. And then Oklahoma, you know, Skip Johnson's always going to have pitchers. They win game 2-4-2. And you think, okay, all right, okay, LSU will figure it out. No, they don't. They don't figure it out. They don't figure it out. Oklahoma wins game 3-4-3. And now if you're LSU, you're really starting to worry. They bounce back in the midweek, and they beat a Louisiana Tech team that hadn't been as good as maybe they have been in recent years. They mercy ruled that game 15-5. And then Kentucky rolls in. It seemed like every game is at Alex Box. That's just how it seems. They went to Nashville, but it seemed like every game is there. Kentucky wins game 1-7-4. And you're really hoping and praying that Kentucky will figure it out and get the series. They don't. LSU gets a shutout 7-0 in game 2, and then a 17-10 win. And Kentucky was up in that game on Sunday, but just ran out of pitching. On Tuesday, March 31st, the Jags of Southern make the trip across town from Scenic Highway to the box and get beat 16-6. But wait, there's more. LSU goes to Tennessee. Both teams were struggling. Felt like it was going to be a coin flip of a game. I thought Tennessee may get them being at home, LSU wins game one, 7-5. They lose the second one, 4-1. And then, crazy game that goes 12 innings, and LSU wins it by 10, right? You remember that? They had that crazy ninth inning where they scored 9 or 10 runs. Craziness. And just when you think LSU's figured it out, Bethune-Cookman rolls into the box and wins the game 10-7. And there was nothing really fluky about it. They've kind of been in a tailspin ever since. LSU travels up to Ole Miss, and we talked about it before that series, that Mike Bianco always has Ole Miss ready to play LSU. Number one, he played at LSU, but also there is this make-believe rivalry in the minds of Ole Miss fans. But Ole Miss wins at 6-3 and 12-2 in 7, and then 8-7 in Game 3. They bounce back and beat Northwestern State in a barn burner of a game 4-2. So pretty good midweek pitching then. And then last weekend, they host Texas A&M. And that's the thing, too. You look at all these series, like all these home series you're losing. It's so damaging. They lose 10-4, 7-2, and then 5-2. And then on Tuesday, they beat UNO, the Privateers, 10-7. It was a game for about six innings, and then LSU kind of flexed their muscles and put it out. So, again, game one tomorrow, 3 p.m. As of now, game two is still set for 6:30 and then 1 o'clock on Sunday. Let's kind of look inside the numbers here. See, this episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And for some, summer is their favorite season of the year. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, adventure becomes a focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough. It could be overwhelming. Then they start counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And you feel like you're wasting all these days of beautiful sunshine. We plan to get out and have some fun as a family too, but we plan to thrive and not just survive. Therapy can help people better understand their needs and feel more confident setting boundaries and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists. It is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct, and they are fully licensed in the United States. The reality of it is you need to learn how to say no. You don't have to say yes to everything. Take advantage of BetterHelp and take charge of your summer. You don't have to say yes. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. LSU has done it. Of course, they've gotten, you know, two big moments this week of bad news. Derek Curiel is a kid last year. I told Jay Johnson this. We simply could not get him out last year down in Baton Rouge. We just simply, it didn't matter if it was leading off an inning, two outs in an inning, RBI situation. It just, we simply couldn't get him out. He was great. And that's a little bit of, you know, hyperbole. But, man, it always felt like Derek Curiel was either starting a rally or contributing to one. Guy's going to be, you know, selected very early in a Major League Baseball draft here in a couple months. He's hitting .349 to lead the team at 5 home runs, 39 RBI. On base percentage is .423, so it's not as gaudy as it used to be. Cade Armbide is hitting .311. And he's got 11 jacks and 28 RBI, and he's going to have to step up the game a little bit. The reason I say that is because he is one of only two LSU regulars to hit above 300. There was another, Jake Brown, star outfielder, kind of the heart and soul of that team. He was hitting .309 and leading them in 16 home runs and 49 RBI. He's done for the year. Had the hammy bone surgery. It's terrible. You hate that for a young man, but he does have a NAFL championship, and he'll never have to buy a beer in Baton Rouge the rest of his life. He's going to sign a big check or deposit a big check this summer. But that's the list of the regulars that are hitting 300 or better. Steven Malam, a guy that everybody, you know, knows in this league, is hitting .282. He's got six jacks, 25 RBI, but he's still a very scrappy ball player. Don't take anything away from him. Omar Serna Jr. is hitting .280, three jacks. But they're a team that's got 67 jacks right there with us. but then you remove 16 of those jacks, you know, it would be like us losing Ace Reese. It truly would be. Some younger guys are going to have to step up and play. But offensively, this has not been a great team this year. Again, they do some interesting things offensively, but they're not great. They're hitting 280 as a team. You know, State's hitting 316. They have hit some jacks. But again, away from Alex Box, which is a program, a stadium that was built with offense in mind, it's far from pitcher's park, especially the left. You know, with that jet stream, the way that stadium is constructed, it's like they constantly have a little wind pushing towards left. I mean, hey, you build the stadium, you build it where you get a real home field advantage. But Mason Braun is a guy that we expect to probably play some this weekend for them. He's hitting 268. But as a team, they're just kind of interesting to me. They don't run the bases extensively. You know, 34 of 44, and Jake Brown was 9 of 10. So, and he was the second leading base stealer. Curiel, obviously, you know, a guy that's just does it all right. He's got 10 of 12. But outside of that, they don't run the bases well. They don't run often. Their team also doesn't give up a lot of stolen bases. Opponents are just 35 of 46. So taking an extra bag may prove to be interesting. Now, a couple years ago, you know, Devin Sheeran was a guy that a lot of people wanted us to take out of the portal. Of course, he got hurt and didn't pitch much last year. He has pitched a little bit this year, 14 appearances. He's 3-1 with a 2.84. All of that is in relief. So we will probably see him at some point this weekend. Grant Fontenot pitched on Tuesday. He has been kind of a midweek guy and also a weekend reliever when they've needed him. 14 appearances and 3 starts. Now, Cooper Moore was the Sunday starter, and he's been out a few weeks, and then they announced this week he's going to undergo Tommy John surgery. And as Ben McDonald says, that's a guy you were hoping to get back for the month of May as you kind of make a push towards a postseason. You think about, hey, we're bringing back our regular Sunday guy. That's a loss. He's 3-3 on the year, 6 starts this year, 3-38 is the ERA. But, you know, the Friday-Saturday stuff is pretty much settled. They're going to be TBA on Sunday. So Friday, Kaysen Evans, a right-handed pitcher who's 2-2 with a 5.47 ERA, will be the opener. He's a sophomore. And then William Schmidt, another right-hander who's 4-4 with a 4.14 ERA, will throw on Saturday. So right-handed pitching at times has been something we crush, especially from the left-handed side. So we're going to need Ace Reese, Reed Stallman, Garrick Fry, who's a switch hitter, you know, Jacob Parker. A lot of our power bats hit from the left-handed side. Now, we've struggled at times with some right-handed spin, so that's something to consider too. But I think once we get the splits, and I'll get my analytics tonight, and we'll have that up for you in the morning, I think you're going to find that left-handers tend to do pretty well against these guys. What's interesting, you know, like looking at Kaysen Evans, batting average against is .220. But 76 strikeouts against 26 walks, that's not too bad. The problem has been is just, you know, run reduction. He's given up 32 earned runs, and he's just under a hit per. Defense has kind of let him down, but he also leads the staff with 9 wild pitches. Control has been a real issue with him. I think everybody kind of sees that for what it is. And then you talk about William Schmidt. You know, batting average against is .223. But he's a guy that's about, yeah, 3-1, strikeout to walk ratio, 67-22. But again, run reduction hadn't been great. Less than a hit per, but when you begin to stack up these walks, and he's another guy too that struggled with control, 5 hit batsmen, and 8 wild pitches. So, you know, that's an interesting concept too. Now, granted, you expect the guys that pitch more innings are going to have more of those. But the starting pitching has been pretty good at times. Not great, not elite, not what we've expected from LSU. But on top of that, defensively, they have just been a bit of an adventure. It's interesting. As a team, the you know, fielding percentage, .965. You know, not terrible, but man, they've had some big errors and big moments. They truly have. Jake Brown had 5 of them, So you remove that. But, you know, Pearson's had six, and it feels like, man, there's always a Pearson on the roster up there. But it's just one of those things, man, when you look at this LSU team, they're not what we normally expect. They're just not. And that's not in any way to make fun of them. You know, I lived down there for 16 years. I got a lot of friends that are great LSU fans, and you know, they're eager to kind of see what happens of this team. I mean, of course, you know, nobody's in any trouble. They won a national championship last year, but there's a lot of pride in that uniform, a lot of pride in that city, a lot of pride in that program, that fan base. You know, they're not used to losing, and of course, Maneri had kind of lost it for a while, but they were ready to be LSU again. That's, I don't know how any other way to put it. You know, they were ready to be LSU again. And that's one of the things, you know, we wanted that for ourselves. Like, and even though we have not accomplished as much as LSU, you know, we wanted to get back to being a feared baseball program. And we've done some good things, but still probably not enough. And that's the thing, too, like everybody worries about this whole thing with LSU. That's respect, man. That's respect. You know, our fans right now are thinking, man, we can ill afford to lose this series. You're absolutely correct. We got to win this series, and I believe we will. I just can't call a sweep. I know as bad as they played, I just don't know if I can call a sweep this weekend. Now, if we get a sweep, man, not only do we feel as our pride buoyed, but our postseason resume is as well. And so that's one of the things that kind of factors into this, is because you guys want Mississippi State to be a dominant baseball program, and LSU in many respects has been the measuring stick for our own program over the course of the last few years. We always felt like if we could beat LSU, then we could do some. We could beat anybody, right? Because there have been some times, especially in the lifetimes of some of our young bucks out there, where LSU always just, you know, tend to find a way to beat us. And we just don't like that. We don't like that at all. And nor should we ever be happy with that, or be in a situation where we just kind of get okay. Well, you know, we just got to expect to lose to LSU. I don't feel that way at all. And nor should you. We lead the all-time series. We lead the games in Starkville significantly. Let's go out here and get a win. And that's what I expect to happen. I feel confident State is going to win the series. My heart wants to call for a sweep. My head says we shouldn't. You know, Jay Johnson is a great baseball coach, one of the best coaches in college baseball. There's not many coaches out there that can claim multiple national championships, Tim Corbin being one of them, Jay Johnson being another. You know, there's just not a lot of active coaches with multiple rings. And so this whole thing about bringing Jay Johnson in and Scott Woodard did, it worked out, paid off handsomely, right? And so now there's a new sheriff in town. There's a lot of talk about reducing baseball rev share. And then, of course, you know, Virg Osberry comes out and says, hey, they're going to address that. And I'm sure they will, because there was a lot of outcry from the LSU fan base that they see baseball as part of their identity. Much like us, LSU folks love football and love baseball. And they're just kind of fair-weathered about everything else, right? They love the men's basketball team when they're winning. They love the women's team when they're winning. But outside of that, it's not a religion to them like football and baseball are. That it's just become part of their identity. And so to think that LSU would make a reduction in rev share and NIL payments for baseball just seems almost sacrilegious, right? We'd love to be outspending them, and I think this year we probably did, at least on the rev share and NIL side. And they're kind of playing catch up a little bit. So LSU is going to be back to being LSU sooner rather than later. But I hope what happens is they come in here and have a tough weekend and then just absolutely tear it up in the month of May. You know, we need to get as many wins as we can get over them and them help us in the RPI. And they could be, again, we got to take care of our business. But when you look at what's ahead for LSU, they could absolutely have a say in what happens when it comes to the postseason pecking order. And I'll run that down for you. So, like, They host South Carolina next weekend, right? So you feel fairly confident that they should be able to win that series and possibly sweep, right? And so after that, they got to go to Georgia, which is a hitter's park. And again, they're a team that's been pretty good on offense, not elite. Those games will probably turn into Church League softball games. Then they host Florida in Baton Rouge the last weekend of the regular season. And there's a couple teams right there, obviously, in Georgia and Florida that are, you know, either ahead of us or right there with us when it comes to the SEC standings. So we want to win this weekend and then be raving LSU fans the rest of the way, right? I mean, and the truth of the matter is, it doesn't make any difference to me what happens with LSU and South Carolina. A split would be fine either way, but we need them to find a way to win some ball games against Georgia and Florida. We absolutely do. And as good a coach as Jay Johnson is, and as much talent as that team has accrued, I think the shock of losing Jake Brown will have worn off by then, and the offense is going to have to carry him a little bit. And you know as well as I do, you know, Stephen Milam and Derek Curiel and some of those guys that have become mainstays in LSU uniforms, they're going to want to find a way to make a push for the postseason. And so the month of May could be very interesting, and I hope that's when it gets interesting for LSU. The thing that I go back to is, you know, I've been a student athlete. You all have played sports. When you lose your best player and then there's like a double whammy on top of it, you know, it messes with your psyche. I don't care who you are. You can say, well, we got to go do this. You can say it, but it's tough to believe it. It takes some time to absorb that. And I suspect a lot of those players knew last weekend that Jake Brown probably was in bad shape. But we wish Jake a full recovery, and we look forward to going out and covering the series this weekend. All right, time for today's Top 10 List. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler, my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry, and since he is our friend, I think you deserve to have his phone number, 601-500-2344. Save that number in your phone as Mortgage Guy. That way you'll have a mortgage guy, so when you need mortgage help, you don't have to go do a bunch of homework or guesswork. You can get the guy that's got 25 years of experience and know-how that can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. Blair's been my friend for a long time. Love that guy to death. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans with Blair and given us rave reviews. I wouldn't do business with people that wouldn't treat you right. Okay, I would not accept advertising from people that would not do a good job for you. And it's so rewarding to get those reviews. And some of them come to me. They're like, hey, dude, Blair was great. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, the only name to know is Blair Chandler. And he can also help you with that game day condo, which may be more affordable than you think. It can be a very complicated process. At times you need somebody to hold your hand through adulting. And that's Blair Chandler. Be sure to hit him up today. Okay. I told you guys sometimes that you will have a suggestion that may be better than what we got on deck. Sometimes I throw you guys a curveball. However, just last night, Andrew hit up Roy on X and said, Roy, how about a Peacemaker top 10? Well, I haven't watched the series. Of course, John Cena is kind of the star of that show. But after putting this list together, I think maybe I should watch it. Maybe you should too. I don't even know what network it's on. But I like John Cena. I like the fact that this show seems to be a little bit silly and irreverent. But it also features some obscure 80s rock. Yeah. And some more modern bands that have that 80s sleaze rock sound. So, Andrew, you're scratching me right where I itch. So this is for you, buddy, the Peacemaker Top 10, right? So don't ever say that we don't provide quality service. We can get you same-day service sometimes. So let's start with this. And if you're like me, you know, many of these bands came towards the end of the 80s when it was starting to get a little bit watered down, but some of them not so much. But there is a sleaze rock element in all of this. And so I wanted to share that with you ahead of time. There's a couple of these songs you probably don't want to listen to with your kids in the car. Okay. Number 10, Sister, a band called Sister. I didn't know much about them at all. They had this cool track called Would You Love a Creature? And it's a little bit, you know, tongue-in-cheek. But for some of us, it's a bit of a risk, right? For some of us, we're not the easy money. You know, you might have to make an investment and get a return on that investment later in life. That was the case for my bride, for sure. Number nine, a band, Hanoi Rocks. And sadly, one of the main reasons that we know Hanoi Rocks is because of the tragic car accident with Vince Neil that saw Razzle Dingley lose his life. For those of you that have watched The Dirt, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Razzle Dingley was the drummer in Hanoi Rocks. Michael Monroe, what a fabulous front man. And 11th Street Kids made the soundtrack of Peacemaker. We're going to go with that at number nine. Number eight, and this is one of those more modern bands with a throwback style, and we're starting to see more of that. And I like it. I do. It's Reckless Love with Monster. Reckless Love with Monster. And I think it's, when you listen to it, you're going to see, you're going to think this band's like from the Hollywood Strip in 85. They're not. Number seven, a band that is very much tongue-in-cheek and very, 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 very ultra-sleazy. It's a band called Steel Panther. And basically what they did is like they took maybe the sleaziest part of the 80s to absurd levels, kind of as a bit of a caricature, right? So they're not meant to be taken seriously, okay? Every song they write is incredibly offensive to some. I think it's funny. You may not. That's okay. Don't judge me. I won't judge you. But it's If You Really Love Me. And this is basically about trying to talk a girl into doing some things that maybe she doesn't want to do, but it's a funny song. It's not an essay song. Don't get your feelings hurt. Stay off Reddit. Number six, a band that I loved, and actually Steve Summers is the lead singer of this band. We traded some messages over the years. I once stole some lyrics from Steve when I was at Jones to ask out a girl who was at Jones, a product of Laurel High School. I won't mention her name. I hope and assume that she's happily married these days and doing well, as am I, so I don't have any itch or anything like that. But she was super cool and liked her a lot. And I asked her, I borrowed a lyric from Steve Summers and said, you know, maybe you'd like to let me go out with you. That's from the song, I Want to Be With You. That's not on our list, but it's very, very 80s. And even in the 80s, it kind of felt like a throwback. I mean, I love the big chorus. But it's from the band Pretty Boy Floyd. And it's Rock and Roll's Gonna Set the Night on Fire at number six. Number five, a band that Ricky Ragman one day in one of those little text conversations on Twitter that we have with some of our heroes. Ricky Ragman, of course, former host of Headbangers Ball, the only one that really made any sense because he had credibility. You know, they used to have like Adam Curry did it, and Adam had the long hair, but he was a bit of a poser, and there's been a lot of people that did it, but it only really made sense when Ricky Ragman did it. A hand in the gutter and a fist in the gold, right? For those of you, some of you need an explanation. But I asked him one day, who is the one band that kind of fooled you? A band that you thought was going to be huge, and it didn't work out. And some of this is because music was changing. I think some of it, too, though, is the Choir Boys, also known as the London Choir Boys. I think they were a little bit soft in the songwriting department. They were very talented, didn't have a lot of great songs. But this is one of them. And it's a little bit, I wouldn't say tongue-in-cheek, but it's a breakup song, and it's about a relationship, and it's a guy and a girl, and they've got a kid, and they're not together, and he goes to see her, and she tells him, I don't love you anymore. And it's kind of a sad love song, kind of that lover's lament, but it is a good song. Number four, another one of these modern bands with an 80s vintage sound is Hardcore Superstar. I absolutely dig this track so much, man. I didn't know it existed until Andrew requested this list. It is so good. And I don't know if they're using AI or what, but like they incorporate a lot of 80s sound into it. Like even some of the guitar playing, the rhythm, it sounds kind of like what we used to replicate back in the 80s. Now, that's not to say you couldn't do it, but with technology, it's almost a little too authentic. But it's a track called You Can't Kill My Rock and Roll. And man, if you love that 80s sound, it doesn't matter the point of origin. You just love the 80s sound. And that's where that's from. Now, kind of a curveball in the list. I love this song. And little did I know that it was about a school shooting when I first heard it. Because the bass line is so infectious. And some would argue they're not a one-hit wonder, but they are. They are. They got some other good songs in the catalog. But they're not in any ways 80s. It's Foster to People's Pumped Up Kicks. I love the whistle part, too. I just love how simple the song is. And then how catchy it all is. But when you listen to the lyrics, it's a little macabre. All right, number two. The subject of many a teenage boy and a few teenage girls out there in the 80s. The subject of our fantasies, shall we say. It's Lita Ford. And Lita still looks great. She still sounds pretty good. Everybody's lost a little bit of a step, but she's still out there rocking. And man, there was a time that just about every 16-year-old boy around the country had a poster of Lita Ford on their wall. But it's not just because she was great looking. It's because she was the kind of girl we wanted to date. She was very unapologetic. She was brash. It helped that she was beautiful, but it was her attitude, right? Of course, Lita Ford was part of the Runaways with Joan Jett. I mean, so she goes back a few years. But I would say probably her signature solo song is Kiss Me Deadly, and that's number two. The biggest hit she ever had, of course, was the duet with Ozzy Osbourne, Close My Eyes Forever. And it is incredible. Even to this day, that song still holds up. You know what's interesting, too? I get a lot of ideas that I think would help other people. And I share them. I don't want credit or compensation. But I recently thought about a conversation that you and I had about Ozzy Osbourne. And I'm still grieving Ozzy Osbourne. Of course, I've accepted it. But, you know, seeing some of the Jack Osbourne interviews, like when he interviewed Youngblood and stuff, it's just one of those things, man. It reminds me of what we lost. And I share with you guys, too, that, you know, for a group of teenagers that grew up in a decade where, you know, dads didn't talk about their feelings. Our dad didn't tell us that they loved us, you know. But Ozzy did. And at the end of every show, Ozzy would say, "I love you all." And he meant it. And so I found out through a friend how to get a hold of Ozzy's management team. And I emailed them. I said, "Hey, of course, very sorry that we've lost Ozzy." And kind of told kind of my thinking about that whole thing about Ozzy telling us he loved us. I said, "What if you guys like sold a shirt that said, Ozzy loved me, or Ozzy loved us all?" And then like you put that up for his favorite causes, like the proceeds went for that. Would you buy that shirt? I would buy that shirt. And I would love to have like an Ozzy shirt that says, "Ozzy loved me." I think that is so incredibly special. I think that. Maybe you may disagree. Anyway, I sent it to his management team, and they said they're going to review it. And, who knows? Maybe we'll be able to buy that shirt here in the months to come. I hope so. I think it'd be super cool. But number one, and maybe it's because I've got a personal bias because I know some of the guys in this band. I've met them all. And, Danny probably is Slim Tender, probably my favorite. But Tammy Down and I have had many conversations, and I think a lot of him. As you guys know, he's in recovery, and just last year, he lost Kimberly, who was in many respects the love of his life. We'd like to say it was an accident, but it wasn't. She jumped off a balcony on a cruise ship, and then Tammy, a lot of people tried to say, "Oh, he must have done it." Of course, all the videos showed it verified his account of what happened. And then he had to stay in that cabin for days until they were able to get him off the boat while the investigation was going on. And so this song is kind of apropos. And when I was in jail, I wrote the lyrics to this song to my dad. And in many ways, it kind of began a dialogue because I don't know that he really understood that I felt certain things. And it became kind of a springboard to us really becoming best friends. And I told Timmy that story. And that particular night when they played it, he pointed to me and said, "This one's for you." And that means an awful lot to me. But it's House of Pain from Faster Pussycat. And I've had so many people over the years, when I share that story with them, or I share what that song has meant to me, many of you have reached out and said, "Dude, that song always gets to me." And it does. And it's just like that whole part. I was 18 and still talking to myself. You know, even saying that out loud makes the hair on my arm stand up, what there is, you know. But anyway, I love Faster Pussycat. I have any time they're in a reasonable driving distance, and it aligns with my schedule. I go and see those guys. They still put on a killer show. And I love some of the newer musicians in the band, too. You know, Chad, of course, Chad Stewart on drums, phenomenal guy. A great drummer and even better person. And me and the homie Sam Denton have hung out with Faster Pussycat a handful of times. And we went to Memphis to see them. We've been all over to see them. And it's been great. Went down and saw them for the first time in forever. I can't think of MK's club. Bonnie Blair's. Is that right, Bonnie Blair's? Yeah. And that was a lot of fun. But the guys in Faster Pussycat still out doing it, doing a great job. They've released some new material the last couple of years that I think that you'll enjoy. But probably in many respects, kind of the kings of sleaze in the 80s, right? You go back to the debut album, the self-titled album, of course, with Bathroom Wall. I got your number off the bathroom wall. And man, I'm so glad I didn't use the other stall, right? There's a lot of that kind of Aerosmith-ish, Dr. Demento, like double entendre and a lot of the stuff that they write. And so anytime that we can talk about Faster Pussycat on the show, it's always a great thing. So Andrew, thanks for the suggestion. I hope that I have satisfied you with this. The Bang Camaro songs are not on iTunes. I don't know if they're on Spotify, but I first learned of Bang Camaro on like Rock Band, and super cool. But again, thanks so much for the suggestion. If you're like Andrew and you have a suggestion for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend on X, and he will get those lists over on Spotify for you sooner rather than later. But that's what happened. Andrew hits up Roy. Roy gets it to me. I don't always see all my notifications. That's not a flex. I'm just being honest with you. But you can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. And find our great list on Spotify under the Dogmatic 67 handle. Again, that's DOGMATIC67. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Campus Bookmart is a place that we love. It's a place that we enjoy shopping. It's a place that we enjoy to frequent. And to kind of covet all the things that maybe we can't afford today, because there's so much Mississippi State merchandise in there that we'd love to take home. Either we don't have the financial wherewithal to do it or the storage space to bring it. Nevertheless, when you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, look no further than Campus Bookmart right here in Starkville. We believe in supporting small business and supporting Mississippi State businesses when we can, especially those in Starkville. It's your favorite town in the world, right? Why wouldn't you want to shop a Starkville business? Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job of outfitting that store with all the latest in Mississippi State merchandise and wares. When it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't get too cute. Just go ahead and buy some more Mississippi State merch for all the Bulldog fans in your life. Graduation's coming up soon, so be thinking about those diploma frames. It's a timeless gift. You can be the preferred aunt, uncle, parent, grandparent, whatever. You can put everybody's name on the tag if you want to, but you and I both know you're the one that bought it. So next time you're in town, come by and see them. If you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net and use promo code BSR to get free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a look at the weekend to come. We took a bit of a break in recording the show. And now some games have gone final. Alabama with a big game one win over Tennessee to open that series. 12-8 is the final. A lot of offense in this ball game, obviously. 10 hits for Alabama, 11 for Tennessee. Alabama does commit an error. However, doesn't cost them, right? But it's always interesting, you know, because Alabama's kind of had their number. You know, I don't know what it is. Maybe Rob Vaughn just gets those guys up and ready to play. Tennessee now 27-15 on the year, 8-11 in the conference. And 21-9 at home. It's a lot of home losses. It truly is. And, you know, they've got three wins over us. And that's one of those things you look back and it really kind of just chaps to hide. But looking a little more into this ballgame here with Alabama, if we can. 12-8 is your final, as we mentioned. Tyler Face credited with the win. He's now 7-3. Landon Mack, very talented pitcher, pitched extremely well against us, is now 3-4. He's tagged with the loss. It's just one of these games, too, where Mack just couldn't find it for one reason. Alabama scores the first four innings and lead the game 6-4 as they get to the fifth. And then Alabama tacks on three in the sixth and the seventh. Tennessee answers with two in the sixth and seventh, but that's just not enough. When you're trading runs and you're already in a deficit, it's tough to come back and win the ball game. But Tyler Fay, a guy that pitched against us last year out of the bullpen, he was ordinarily a reliever, but he was their Sunday starter, if memory serves me correct. Justin LeBron, 1-for-4, night for Alabama, and they still managed to win the ball game. Yeah, so good job for Alabama. They'll look to take the series on Friday. And Arkansas and Missouri. Arkansas travels to Como, and they get the win, but they really had to work for it. Missouri jumps out to a 3-0 lead in this ballgame, and that's where it stayed through the fourth. Arkansas gets on the board in the fifth with a single run, scoreless sixth, and then Arkansas ties it in the seventh. In the eighth, Arkansas takes a 5-3 lead. Missouri scores one in the ninth and brings the tying run to the plate, but can't get it done. They actually out-hit the Razorbacks 8-6. We talked about that earlier in the year, how this Arkansas offense just doesn't really scare you. They had their moments. And ironically, T.J. Pompey, who walked off Mississippi State, had a solo home run this evening against Missouri. Blaze Ward, talented second baseman for Missouri, goes 2-for-3, a home run and two RBI. So let's look at the rest of the weekend. As Arkansas obviously will be going for the series win, we expect that to happen. You got to wonder what's going to happen with Tennessee. A lot of these games have been moved up. Alabama and Tennessee will play 1:30. Everybody's trying to get ahead of the weather. 1:30 is your start time from Lindsey Nelson, which negates a lot of the home field advantage, right? You have the night game. You have time for people to get off work and get to the ball game. But when it's a 1:30 first pitch, that's an advantage for Alabama. And granted, Alabama, the slightly better record and perhaps the slightly better team, at least record-wise, so it could be interesting. And now you got to feel like with Alabama beating Landon Mack that the advantage is theirs. And so we kind of shift our attention here. And I would say, yeah, I like Alabama to take this series. I still think Tennessee will salvage one. You know my feelings about LSU and Mississippi State, and now I see that Alabama and Tennessee are going to play a doubleheader on Friday. So we won't have to wait long to get the verdict there. Texas A&M will visit Florida. This could be a very entertaining series. Now, Mississippi State won't play Florida. We will play Texas A&M the last regular season weekend. The Aggies have absolutely surprised a lot of people. 31-7, and they've made a believer out of me. I really thought early on in the year, I said, you know what, this A&M thing is not going to work out. It looks like it's going to. Caden Sorrell having one of the best years in the conference, hitting .365, 18 home run, 59 RBI. And Blake Sears done a good job for Florida too, but the numbers aren't nearly as gaudy. Florida's 28-14, 10-8. They're tied right there with Mississippi State. I think your rooting interest here is for Texas A&M. Now, we don't want to get too far behind them, obviously, so a split would be great. But Florida's right there with us. And so, you know, the more that we can clear the traffic and then take care of our own business, the better our hosting opportunities should be. But it's so interesting to know with Florida, they have been so Jekyll and Hyde this year. They'll get swept one weekend and then sweep the next. That sounds familiar, right? But they just, for some reason, this Florida team struggles in the midweek. And I think that's something that could also kind of tilt things in the balance of Mississippi State come selection time. But Scott Strickland is still on the selection committee. I know that he would do right by us, but the reality of it is that you know, he has a job to do and he has a school to represent. So the more losses they take, the better it is for Mississippi State, provided we take care of business. Kentucky is in South Carolina, and you know, we saw South Carolina last week. They just don't have a lot of SEC players. They don't, and I do think Brandon Stone and Amp Phillips are competitive weekend starters, and they've got a couple guys out of the bullpen that have some juice with them. But you know, if Kentucky's going to make a move, and they need to, this is probably the weekend to do it. The Wildcats 8-10 in the conference and 26-13 overall. We expected Kentucky to be a team to make the NCAA tournament, and they still should. But this would be a big weekend for them if they could find a way to get a sweep, which is always so difficult to do, to get a road sweep. But you got to feel at least they can get a couple, which would get them the double-digit wins in the league. Let's say they finish up 10-11 this week with three weekends left. You feel like there should be a good chance for them to get, you know, if they can avoid being swept, they should be able to get to 14 or 15, which I think is enough to get them in the tournament because of their strength of schedule and RPI. Of course, South Carolina is not going to make the tournament. Again, losing record right now, 20-22. And it's just so crazy to think South Carolina won two national championships under Ray Tanner and how that program has just fallen in such disrepair. Probably one of the best pitched series of the weekend will take place at Auburn, Alabama. Skip Johnson's Oklahoma Sooners will visit Auburn. Both of those teams, identical records, 28-12 overall, 10-8 in the Southeastern Conference. And again, right there with Mississippi State and Auburn. Last I checked, the number one strength of schedule in the country. So they've kind of got that figured out. But it would be nice to see one of these teams fall to the wayside. You almost wish there was a sweep here. But if Mississippi State can get a sweep and then there's a split here, you pick up two games on somebody and one on the other. And I think that's what will happen. I think Auburn will take two of three from Oklahoma. And Oklahoma has surprised me. I will be quite honest with you with that. I thought Oklahoma would be perhaps a tournament team, but they're in the hosting discussion. So as many of these SEC teams as we can get to fall out of the hosting discussion, the better it is for us. Again, provided we've got to take care of our stuff, the traffic will clear around us. A lot of parity in the league. Texas is at Vanderbilt. And I don't know what to make of this Vanderbilt team. We all know that they are somewhat pitching deficient because of some injuries. Texas doesn't have a great bullpen. Vanderbilt has showed a penchant for the comeback in the later innings. So if you're Vanderbilt, you just kind of want to hang around and hang around and hang around and then hope you can get in that Longhorn bullpen. Texas 30-8 overall and 11-6 in the conference. Vanderbilt's right there at 9-9. Of course, they're behind Mississippi State. State holds all the tiebreakers over Vanderbilt, even though we're just a game ahead of them in the standings. But I like Texas to take two of three. I think Vanderbilt will salvage a game here. And, of course, Texas is short a game that they likely would have lost against A&M due to the rainout out there. Perhaps the most offensive series of the weekend could come in Oxford, Mississippi. Number 5, Georgia, who got absolutely shelled on Tuesday by Georgia Tech at Truist Field there in Atlanta, will visit Ole Miss. Now, from a pitching standpoint, I favor Ole Miss here with Hunter Elliott and Townsend. But Wes Johnson has done a really good job kind of piecing this thing together, right? I don't know that they've got a dominant bullpen. They've got a couple of big arms. Obviously, Caden Aoki's been very good. So you feel like if you can get to Aoki with the lead, He's a guy that could even go four or five innings if you need to, just to kind of close one out. He pitched twice on a weekend against us. So he clearly has that rubber arm where he can recover very quickly. So Ole Miss will likely see Aoki a couple times, who's probably in line for some all-SEC honors when it's all said and done. One of the better relievers in the conference. But, Daniel Jackson is having a monster year, and he's a guy behind the plate that can still strike too. With ABS, that'll be something that hurts him in the pros. But the reality of it is Daniel Jackson putting up SEC Player of the Year quality numbers. 378 average, 20 home run, 59 RBI. Tristan Bassetta obviously having a big year. Didn't have a great weekend against Mississippi State, but he's had a great year overall, hitting 353, 19 home runs, 51 RBI. And, of course, we'll see them on Tuesday down in Pearl. I like Georgia to take the series. 2-1. I think in some respects, you'd almost want Ole Miss to do it just because of the fact we have 3 wins over them. But again, the more people we can eliminate from the hosting discussion, the better off we're going to be. And of course, I like Arkansas to take Missouri. May see Arkansas sweep that one. But again, offensively, you just never know what's going to happen with Arkansas. From one game to the next, you simply never know what it's going to look like. And so, taking a quick look at the standings, again, as we kind of get into this thing, Florida, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Auburn, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Alabama, all right there together at 10-8. I guess Arkansas and Alabama are 10-9 right now. But we're all kind of log-jammed right in there together. So there's still a lot of room to maneuver, and there's a lot of time to kind of put this thing together. Texas A&M currently owns the longest winning streak, active winning streak in the conference with 6 games. State right behind them with 5. So there's a good chance that somebody's to get snapped this weekend, if not both. But I would favor Mississippi State as the team that probably survives the weekend more so than A&M with their winning streak intact. But it is Mississippi State LSU. You can never forecast a sweep when these two teams get together. You just can't. No matter what the records show, it's still going to say LSU on those caps. There's a lot of pride in that uniform. They understand what's at stake. Probably have this us against the world type mentality at this point. It's all part of it, man. It just is. But, we got some room to maneuver. And then, just ahead of us, Texas is 11-6. A&M is 12-5. And, of course, missing that game will help them in the percentage points because – it's one less game that you got to divide by. Then Georgia's right there at 13-5. So A&M challenging for an SEC championship. And what a response that would be after last year when they were the preseason number one and then didn't make the NCAA tournament. That's pretty incredible. It truly is. Truly is. Let's look at some team numbers here too. Georgia leading the SEC with a 324 batting average. Mississippi State is second at 316. Georgia, of course, on a historic pace, 116 home runs, and the weather is only going to get warmer, right? So we'll see how things progress from there. Your Bulldogs down at sixth with 68 home runs, just one ahead of LSU, one behind Ole Miss. And earlier in the year, that was the big story, right? Ole Miss is hitting all these home runs, and we weren't. Tennessee at 73, A&M at 80, and then Vanderbilt at 87. Of course, Vanderbilt got the big, big, big jump right out of the gate. As far as RBIs go, Georgia, of course, leads at 383, then A&M at 338. Your Bulldogs, third in the Southeastern Conference at 327. When it comes to runs scored, this is an interesting dynamic because, we were right there with Georgia, right, when we played them, and it was a tightly contested series, but they outscored us. They've had some gaudy scores since then. Of course, that 26-14 game against Arkansas has allowed them to get a little separation, but Georgia's now scored 402 runs this year. A&M at 369, your Bulldogs at 348, one ahead of Vanderbilt and 20 ahead of LSU. On base percentage, A&M leads at 444, then Georgia at 442, Texas at 419, and then your Bulldogs fourth at 415. And you can kind of jump across there too for slugging percentage. Obviously, Georgia's going to lead at a gaudy 628. A&M at 581, Vandy at 546, and then your Bulldogs at 537. All those doubles tend to help. You know, we don't run the bases a whole lot, but we're right there in the middle of the pack, right there at 48, and that's good enough for eighth in the conference. Kentucky leads the conference with 100 stolen bases. Oklahoma's there at 92. And we talked about LSU and their inability to kind of run the bases this year. They've only got 34 stolen bases, and as we've mentioned, Jake Brown is out. He was one of the more prolific base stealers. South Carolina has the fewest stolen bases with 18. Strikeout from a hitting standpoint is rather interesting. Ole Miss has the most strikeouts. Their hitters have struck out 415 times. South Carolina just barely ahead of them at 406. But LSU, they're sixth. So they're putting the ball in play. I mean, you look at some of these offensive numbers, and again, they've been good offensively, not great, maybe not great by LSU standards. But they are, you know, putting the ball in play and obviously doing some good things. They just need to, you know, pitch it a little bit better. Mississippi State just ahead of LSU at 322 strikeouts. And then it's Kentucky at 303, Texas at 299, A&M at 294. And the team that's leading the Southeastern Conference with the fewest number of hitter strikeouts is Auburn at 292. And I like for us to take a little time every now and again and look at these things. I think it's important for us because what happens is we get so caught up in what we're doing, we don't always have the proper context. On the pitching side, team ERA, and we won't go the full list here. Auburn leads the Southeastern Conference with a 3.27 ERA. And then there's Texas at 341, and then your Bulldogs at 342. So we're one 100th away from being number two. LSU, 508 strikeouts this year, leading the nation in strikeouts. Ole Miss is 474, and of course this is from the pitchers, and then your Bulldogs at 467. So again, we're right there, you know, and how far have we come in 2 years under Justin Parker? Walks allowed, Auburn leads 98, A&M at 100, Texas at 126, tied with Tennessee, and then your Bulldogs at 127. So we're basically, you know, two walks fewer away from being third this year. Home runs allowed. We're kind of middle of the pack here. Maybe a little bit better than middle of the pack. Arkansas has allowed the most at 56. LSU has allowed 40. They're number eight. Your Bulldogs are sixth in the conference at 35. Then there's Auburn at 33, Alabama 32, Kentucky 31, Florida 24, and then Texas 20. And you tuck away that Texas knowledge just because it may matter here in a couple weeks. On the fielding side of things, you know, we've had some people talk about our defensive woes at times. And granted, we have certainly booted the ball around at times. However, to kind of frame things up in the proper context, Alabama's the worst defensive team in the conference at 960. And then there's LSU at 965. Your Bulldogs are fourth in the Southeastern Conference with a 981 fielding percentage. And that's just behind Georgia and A&M at 983 and then Tennessee at 985. I mean, that's how close this thing truly is. And so I point that out because if you look at these statistical categories, by and large, in all the major categories, your Bulldogs are among the league leaders. And I think sometimes, again, we get so acutely aware of what's happening in the big maroon bubble, we don't always take a chance to look and see what's happening around the conference. And so I thought we'd spend a little time to do that today. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should, right? We've stayed there. We had a great time. We stayed there New Year's of 25, and my mom is still excited about doing it again. And it was so nice to have my mom, my wife, my kids, my grandkids all under one roof. And we didn't go do a whole lot. We just kind of enjoyed each other. You know, we went out to dinner, I think, once and more time. We cooked another time. We ordered in once and just kind of enjoyed that facility. Now, you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And when you do, their Facebook page will pop up. The pictures on that Facebook page don't even really do it justice. It is an incredible facility. Just the pictures itself, you say, hey, this is nice. And you get there and it's even nicer than you thought. And you can check out all the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area. It's absolutely outstanding, plenty of parking, and it's just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there, right? And how cool is that? The game is over, and you're already at your accommodations, and you can put on some other college football or baseball or basketball, whatever your choice is, whatever the season is, and just enjoy being together and enjoying some sports. So, hey, maybe it's a bachelorette weekend. Maybe it's a baby shower weekend. Maybe it's a college roommate reunion, or perhaps just a family weekend. And, yeah, you don't have to go. You can go by yourself. They're making a difference to us. But when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options will pop up. That's Airbnb or Vrbo, VRBO, no matter how you want to go with it. But if you want to save some money, book it under the Evolve website. That's Evolve, and use promo code BSR10. That gets you 10% off your stay. Again, that's beautiful Steve Robertson, the number 10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right, let's spend a little time talking about the NFL draft. We do expect to have a player or two, maybe three, get drafted, and we don't expect any of that to happen before, you know, day two. Obviously, day one's already in the books. But, you know, Brennan Thompson's a guy that may go a little earlier than some people forecast. Sadu Traore, of course, is kind of a walk-in mismatch, kind of that new age NFL tight end. And then there's Albert Rees. We think those three guys are probably the most likely to get drafted. We'll see how things go. But kind of looking, you know, if you've kept up at all, I did not watch the draft tonight. I had work to do, obviously, but also, too, I knew we weren't going to have anybody drafted, and so I chose to find my entertainment elsewhere. But a Heisman Trophy winner and Indiana National Championship quarterback, Fernando Mendoza, goes number one to the Raiders. But looking at some SEC stuff here for you. The first SEC player drafted was Mansoor Delane, cornerback from LSU. He's headed to Kansas City. Caden Proctor from Alabama, the first Crimson Tide player taken. The number 12 pick is an offensive tackle to the Miami Dolphins. And just behind him, his teammate, Ty Simpson, taken with pick number 13 by the Chargers. And so that's – is it the Chargers? Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Ty Simpson is a interesting story. It seemed like he was going to go into the transfer portal like the last 2 years. And then he elected to stay. Alabama obviously didn't go win a national championship during his tutelage or his tenure as a quarterback. But he parlays that opportunity into a first-round draft pick selection. So congratulations to Ty and Jason Simpson, the whole family. We're awfully proud for Ty and wish him the best as they move forward. Caleb Banks played against him. Defensive tackle from the University of Florida is the 18th pick of the first round to the Minnesota Vikings. Monroe Freeling, an offensive tackle from Georgia, 19 to the Panthers. And then Casey Concepcion, a guy that we know well, right? A guy that we chased out of the portal, landed at A&M, had a huge year. He's headed to the Cleveland Browns with the 24th selection. And then the final SEC player taken in the first round is Keldrick Falk, edge rusher from Auburn, 31 to the Titans. And so we'll see what happens tomorrow. But, of course, more SEC players get drafted than anybody else, and the SEC office is more than happy to share that information every year. There's a lot of pride in all this. And the thing about it is, like, I think about this kind of thing all the time. Like, you know, I always want what's best for Mississippi State. That's always on my mind. And, not getting players drafted is not great for Mississippi State. It's kind of a mark of, you know, where we are at a program sometimes and from a talent level. So, you know, we have to get pro players and we have to get guys that we develop into pro players to help us get more players of pro potential. But I like the SEC draft results. I think it's a great thing. Like, I mean, we kind of root against these kids, right? Because, like, it's rooting against our own self-interest, right? When we can respect their game, But I think when you see young people that share a field or a TV screen of interest with us, go make their dreams come true and kind of set their families up, it is a wonderful thing. And so, yeah, I like to see the SEC do well in the draft, but I want to see more Mississippi State names called. I mean, you go back and you think about how great that 2018 draft was, or the following 2018 season. I guess it technically it had been the 2019 draft. We had three first-round picks. That's high cotton for Mississippi State. But we've got to put ourselves in a situation where we are proving to young people that we can develop them and turn them into pro prospects. And, of course, they got to do their part. They got to come in and work hard and stay healthy and fly straight and make good decisions. However, we need to be able to show them that we have a system that will enable them to make their dreams come true. That's one of the most important things for a college football program and really any program. People talk about developing, and that's become a buzzword even among young people. I want to be developed. And sometimes that's a little bit of lip service, but the reality of it is every guy that worth their salt understands they're not going to show up and dominate as a freshman. It just doesn't happen that way. There are rare exceptions, but a lot of times kids dominate in high school just because they're the superior athlete. Well, once you get on the field with comparable talent, you have to develop. You have to learn to run routes. You have to learn good hand placement as an offensive lineman. You've got to learn good leverage as a defensive lineman. There's just a lot to this. And a lot of young people don't understand that they're getting recruited based on their potential and not just on their performance. You're good enough to get our attention, but in order for us to go invest money in you, scholarship money, rev share, NIL, well, then you've got to reach your potential and you've got to be hungry to find that stuff. And so that's an important aspect of this thing, too. Finding kids that are right fit for your culture. I hate going into the draft not feeling excited. And what I mean by that is like I knew day one there was no chance of us having a first-round draft pick. Right, we all knew this, and my hope is, Jeff Levy is a guy that will cultivate some of those in time at Mississippi State. And again, Brennan Thompson is a Jeff Levy success story. Absolutely incredible to think what he did. He was basically just kind of a backup receiver everywhere else he went, and he comes to Mississippi State, becomes a priority target, and sets a school record for us. And you see what Anthony Evans did last year. Basically as a number two, and now you bring in Marquise Johnson this year. And so there should be an opportunity next year for other Mississippi State receivers to be drafted. And if and when Brennan Thompson is drafted, he will be the first Mississippi State wide receiver that has been drafted since Justin Jenkins. And some of you don't even know who that is. You'll have to Google him. Yeah. So it's been a long time since we've had a receiver drafted. And so when you begin to kind of think about what that means for us on the recruiting trail and how teams recruit against us, Levy can say, hey, look at what we did for Anthony Evans. Look at what we did for Kevin Coleman. Look at what we did for Brennan Thompson. And that's all great and it's all well and fine, but you want to be able to get some kids drafted so you can say, hey, you can come here, put up big numbers, and the pros are going to look at you, right? So this is a huge moment, not just for Jeff Levy, but for Mississippi State football, because that is something that has been used against us for years. Even in the Dan Mullen era, we had several schools that recruited against us and say, yeah, Dan Mullen's won a lot of games, but hey, he's a run-first coach at heart. And you're going to block a lot there. You're not going to have a chance to go catch passes and stretch the field vertically. And you remember, when Phil Longo was at Ole Miss, that was their big thing. They had DK Metcalf and A.J. Brown, and both of those guys had proven to be absolutely outstanding pro receivers. Now, they had pro potential before they got to Ole Miss, but they were able to go put up some gaudy numbers. And so as a result, because of the brand of offense that we ran, we just weren't as pass happy. And we certainly didn't challenge down the field vertically as much as they did. And so this is where the whole Levy Ole Miss thing works in our favor, is because he knows what wide receivers are looking for, and he knows what pros are looking for in college receivers, and he knows how to cultivate that. And so, we really hope that Brennan Thompson is drafted for Brennan Thompson, but the byproduct of that, too, is that Mississippi State kind of gets, that monkey off our back about we can't get a wide receiver drafted. And we've had some very good ones that have come through this program, but for one reason or another, we have not been able to get them selected. And I remember when Bump was here, after his first year, he told me when we went undrafted, he said, it's the last year that happens here. And granted, it didn't happen for us, you know, in year two, but, you know, we still got time, right? So, again, we're waiting on Brennan, but I'm just one of those people that I'm just so tired of having to hear that talking point that Mississippi State can't get a receiver drafted. And, you know, Bump in some ways can be, you know, kind of proven prophetic there, even though he's not with our program. And, again, you know, things happen. And, you know, people move on, and that's just kind of the nature of the coaching business. And I traded some messages with Chad just the other day, and seems to be doing well. Family seems to be doing well. And he had a chance to go watch his kid play soccer the other day. And so Chad will always be special to us. And no matter where he is, we'll support him. We will. But, yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, when you begin to think about, you know, what Brennan Thompson did in his single solitary year at Mississippi State, and he kind of rewrites some of Chad Bumpus's records in the process. And I can promise you Chad's very happy about that. But, yeah, if we can get Brennan Thompson drafted, it would mean an incredible amount to a lot of people. Mississippi State still working through the basketball portal. As we've talked about, the outgoing traffic has now subsided, and Mississippi State is picking up some incoming traffic on both the men's and the women's side. And it is worth noting, we absolutely want to see Mississippi State men's basketball play meaningful basketball in the month of March. That's what we all want, right? Even the casual fan wants that. On the men's side, State has picked up, you know, we always talked about R.J. Johnson. We picked up Kendall Sanders from Utah. Kendall Sanders, if I can speak. It's early in the morning here, so give me a break. I thought I was going to go to bed, laid in bed. And said it's some of my, I got so much to do. I need to get up and do this, and I'll just sleep a little bit later in the day. But Kendall Sanders was a freshman last year out of Los Angeles, California. Played at Utah, 6'8", 230 pounds. Played in 32 games, about 20 minutes a game. Not a very prolific scorer, about 5 2/3, right? Or, you know, it's just 5.2, am I thinking? What am I saying? Again, it's early. But, you know, he's the guy that was a role player there. And obviously, you know, we've got to go out and get some athleticism. And hopefully this is a player, too, that Chris Jans and him can kind of develop. And maybe he falls in love with Starkville. And, you know, then he gets excited about the future with Chris Jans. And, you know, we got to have guys that have length and get up and down the floor and do some good things for us. We got to put some guards around Josh Hubbard as well. And maybe we found one with TJ Simpkins. Tawan Simpkins is his Christian name, but everybody calls him TJ. He is a 6'4", 190-pound junior guard out of Brooklyn, New York. Spent 2 years with the Pirates there. This past year, he played in 33 games, 25 minutes, and contributed right at 10 points. The year before, he was a little more prolific as a scorer, nearly 15 points per game. Didn't play in as many games, but played more minutes. And has shot around 40% throughout his career. And is a guy that this past year improved his three-point shooting proficiency, went from 26 to 37. He's been a pretty good free throw shooter, too, a career 78, 79% free throw shooter. Hasn't been a great rebounder. But a young man, too, that obviously will come in and hopefully carry some of the offensive load on the Mississippi State men's team. On the women's side of things, you guys are aware that, you know, we've added Callie Smallwood, Reese Beatty, Macy Pfeiffer, and then we've added Aris Maktoun. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but we've added her in recent days, and it happens so much and so fast. With so much going on in the Mississippi State bubble, sometimes you forget what day it happens. But she spent 3 years with LaSalle. She is a 5'11 guard Which, how great is that, right? To have a little size at guard. Last year, 15 points per game, 7.5 rebounds, and shot right at 40%. Great, but she's not a very prolific three-point shooter, but maybe we don't need her to be. And maybe she ends up playing a three for us. You know, we'll kind of see how that kind of plays out too. But State also picked up a junior college player, one of the better junior college players in the country, on Thursday. Ariana Francisco de Oliveira did the best I could, and I suspect that's Brazilian. I suspect that's the case. But, she spent some time, obviously, on the junior college level. She is from Rio de Janeiro. How about that? And was on the national youth team there. Obviously did some good things. And then, she was part of a NAFL championship team on the junior college level. And so, again, the fact that she's played some internationally will help, right? That'll help. But, again, you're starting to see the pieces kind of come into play here. You're starting to see things begin to kind of, you know, we're not there yet, but we're rebuilding some rosters. And it's good how quickly we've been able to kind of get these things handled, right? That's the last thing you want is the portal to just linger and linger and linger on. Of course, again, outgoing traffic has stopped, but it's nice to see production in the portal on the men's and women's side. And of course, you know, we still need some difference makers, right? Especially on the men's side. I'm still eager to see what Macy Pfeiffer's going to do for the women. She's just a winner and always has been. And grateful to have her and Maroon and White. I know her family has supported State for years. And so it's good to see her have that opportunity, but also to think what she could do here and become a fan favorite and probably be a mainstay. And in the portal era, when you have players that have the opportunity to come home, they're more likely to stay with you, provided they have a good experience. So we hope that's the case. And again, we kind of move forward. We've covered a lot of ground today. Talked a little football, men's and women's basketball, and of course, baseball. And again, reminder for those of you that weren't paying attention, 3:00 Central on Friday. 3:00 Central on Friday, we're going to play a baseball game against LSU. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, with like the whole thing with Tennessee and Alabama, you know, like the game number two is going to be played in the middle of the afternoon, so it negates some of the home field advantage. So we need our students to turn out as best they can. We don't want you skipping class, but hopefully you don't have to. You can come out and support the Bulldogs. You guys are the lifeblood of our future in sports. You guys are going to be, you ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be you that are buying season tickets one day. It's you that are going to be, you know, helping make donations, and some of you may even have your names on buildings someday. And it's important to understand, to kind of get into the prospect of understanding that you matter. It's not just you coming to a ball game and ringing your cowbell. It's not just that. That's how it starts. And we kind of get you addicted. But the reality of it is if we're going to reach greater heights, a lot of it's going to be because of you. And it's not your time yet. You're just kind of whetting your appetite now. But it's so incredibly important for you to be Mississippi State conscious in that stuff, right? To understand that, hey, you know, when I get out one day, I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to start working. And maybe in the beginning, I can't give, and maybe I can't even get season tickets. Maybe I just like a single game ticket every once in a while. But eventually, you're going to get a little more stable in life. And we're going to need you. We're going to need you to buy season tickets, and we're going to need you to give donations and all that kind of stuff. And listen, I mean, it's just that's what it requires, right? And you know, we want you to be able to, you know, to give and give up to your comfort level. But the reality of it is that the sooner that we kind of accept the fact that we're living in a different world right now, the better off we're all going to be. But it's not going to be as simple as the university writing checks. You know, they're going to have to cash some checks too. And the thing that I always, when I was a season ticket holder, the thing that I loved, and I don't know that I can even truly quantify how special it was to me. When I got my tickets Like when my tickets got delivered, I felt like I was a stockholder in Mississippi State Athletics. I mean, it was just a feeling. It was a pride with that. It's like I love when tickets showed up. And that's back in the day when we, you know, we didn't all have digital tickets. But you know, you go, you know, you get that envelope in the mail, right? And they got all of your tickets and they're perforated, and it's like, oh my gosh. And I thought, we're covered for this year, right? We know we're gonna be able to go to every game. And we did. We did. Because we made the investment and we felt like we weren't just fans, we were stockholders in our own program. And maybe you feel differently, and that's certainly your right. But I can tell you, every time that I have given money or raised money or bought tickets for other people, I have always felt like I was doing right by Mississippi State. And I never give my tickets away. I don't. And if for some reason that I couldn't use them, which was an absolute rarity, I made sure that another Bulldog was in my seats. Because I think that stuff matters. I think it matters that we're there in, you know, full voice supporting the team. And so I hope you young people, as you move forward, will understand the responsibility you have, but also to the opportunity you have to be part of something special. If you hadn't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com. You can get signed copies of all my sports titles. That includes Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile, The Dude, and the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. You can also take advantage of our Mother's Day special at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. Dial 662-268-7601 to get more information. Get two floats for $99. What a great Mother's Day special. And you and I both know you have stressed out every mom you have ever known. Now it's time to make amends. Whether it's your mom, your stepmom, your grandmom, the mother of your kids, whatever, you know you have stressed them out. So let them get some relaxation on your dime. What a great Mother's Day gift. And if you're looking for a gift for yourself, or maybe a gift for the sports fan in your life, again, jeanspage.com, 50% off the annual subscription price. Come join us. You'll be glad you did. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.